Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Behind home plate, we bringing it to them all day. All day. You know what's up? Welcome to Birdland. Birdland. Win or lose, we bringing it to you always. Always. You know what's up? Welcome to Birdland. Orange or black, we rebuild the pack. No matter where we at, you know we coming back. Section 336, we on this, so tune in. Tune in. You know what's up? Welcome to Birdland. Yeah, yeah. Welcome to Birdland. You know what's up?
From the boys from Section 336.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Baltimore sports fans of all ages, welcome to Section 336, the next generation of Baltimore sports talk. I am your endearing center host, Matt Soroka. And as always, I'm joined by the button lover, Josh Soroka, coming to us from not Florida, not Maryland. Where are you now, Josh?
I'm in New Jersey. This is where I come to, since we've ever done Section 336. I spent a week in New Jersey volunteering at this middle school camp and eating camp food for some reason for the past 20 years, last week in June, every year. So,
and recording the podcast at some obscene hour.
Yeah, I know. It's always a random time to record the podcast. But the good thing is internet's finally like stable up here. So We can do this where it's not like a crappy sounding phone call or something.
Well, and the good news for me is I was mentally preparing myself to stay up late tonight already. And so I'm good with doing this podcast late because with the West Coast trip, I was already planning on staying up late.
Well, and that's what I love. I love when West Coast trips line up for this week because I'm always up super late because I got to edit a bunch of video and stuff. So it just makes sense. And it's great to have the baseball on the side. So, yeah, it's a great time. And I might have said, oh, let's skip this week. But we skipped last week. We had a bunch of stuff going on last week.
That was my bad. I was traveling to Macon last week.
Yeah. Right. And so, but now... What do you have? Is next week your last episode from Maryland?
Yep. Next week will be my last episode. And then I'll have to get a setup. Hopefully the internet works and everything goes well in my place in Macon.
Yeah. We'll have a good, I think July 11th, something like that, is when we'll have our episode on kind of being an out of town Orioles fan.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to get into that. But we got a lot to talk about today. I mean, because we missed last week. The Orioles are playing good ball. Some promotions in the minors. Pretty good ball.
What are they, over 600 for the month of June so far?
I don't think so.
Yeah, it's like 648 or something.
Oh, really? Percentage
for the month of June. Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah, like I'm the one guy who is, A, not surprised by their playing in June. And if anything, I'm a little disappointed.
Right.
Because I predicted 16-9 or 16-9 or 18-9, something like that.
Should have swept the Nats. Yeah. Should have swept the White Sox.
Yeah.
Obviously, a 4-game sweep is tough.
Yeah. And my bold prediction at the beginning of the year that we would go 18-9 because we're playing some. And when we took a, we won the series against Tampa Bay. I went to one of those games. Tampa Bay is a shell of itself. Half the guys on their team are hurt and weren't there. White Sox are playing worse than I think a lot of people thought that they've been playing. Of course, the Nats are a joke. There's a lot to be excited about with the season, with this month. But also, you could kind of see this coming, given how, who we were playing.
Prospects coming up. Adley's hitting his stride.
Yeah, Adley had become a freaking double machine, like 5 straight games with the double. Is surprising is kind of how we're getting there, but the results to me are not surprising, but the way we're doing it is surprising.
Well, and I think and what we're learning with the way we do it is I think speaks volumes for next year's team and the future of this team. I think the fact that we're seeing a rock solid outfield right now gives you hope for next year. I think the fact that the bats are alive gives you hope for next year. I think the fact that we are doing this, when you said that 18-9 prediction, you assumed Grayson Rodriguez would be on this team right now.
I assumed Grayson Rodriguez.
You assumed John Means would be on this team now, and there's no John Means. So you were doing it with a rotation that three of the guys that you predicted for this rotation are not in this rotation.
Right.
The three and top guys.
Yeah, and so this is part of the surprising thing is our starting pitching hasn't been that good. It hasn't been great.
No.
This team is successful largely because of the bullpen. I mean, we have in baseball, this is in all of baseball, tied with the Rays for the third best ERA bullpen in all of baseball. And it's more impressive that because we use our bullpen more than almost anybody in baseball because, you know, our starters don't go very deep in games. And so our bullpen being so incredible has helped us tremendously. Our starter's ERA is 25th in baseball, which actually, given the injury to John Means, given, you know, Grayson Rodriguez not being here, D.L. Hall not being here, maybe 25th is not like last year when you were 30th in baseball. But still, our starting pitching hasn't been great. Offensively, you're right. We've been pretty good. But again, if you look at the stats offensively, we're, again, bottom half on almost every offensive category. If you look at something as basic as like just run scored, the Orioles are 22nd. If you look at something right. OPS, right, on base plus slugging, the Orioles are 24th. So again, in the bottom 10 of the league in most offensive categories. I was looking today at FanGraphs, you know, their top WAR players, wins above replacement. The Orioles only have one guy in the top 100. It's Hayes.
Or Lopez.
It's Hayes with 1.7 WAR. Though, can I say, Josh, this has caused me the WAR. There's a part of WAR I still don't understand after all these years, and that's the defensive WAR numbers, how they come up with it. Because I think, you know, Austin Hayes has had a pretty good. I mean, we know he's been great offensively,
right?
But I think he's had a pretty good defensive year as well. But according to FanGraphs, he ranks 42nd in defensive outfield. He has a WAR, defensive WAR of -4.2. I don't understand how that's possible.
I don't understand that. Like, how is that determined? Do they take a range or something? Like,
I don't know.
Left field? I don't know how they determine that.
I don't either. And you would never guess, out of all infielders in baseball, the guy who leads the league in defensive WAR, according to FanGraphs, is Jonathan Scope, of all people, who doesn't have very good range, has a strong arm. Like, that whole stat doesn't make sense to me. So I don't know how much stock to put in that we only have one player in the top 100. But it does show this is kind of I was reading someone tweet about kind of the chemistry of this team, and it does seem to just be a well made up team. We see, you know, really good defense, you know. It seems like every game, like one game, it's Adley Rutschman leading the way. The next game, it's Austin Hayes leading the way. The next day, it's Ryan Mountcastle. Like, it seems to be a very kind of well-balanced team with a great bullpen.
Right.
So just it's really kind of really interesting how they're doing it.
Well, and I think that's kind of the Mike Elias approach, is not stars, but balance. And it's also similar to what we've talked about with the Rays, where they do it a lot with pitching and bullpen, where it's like they just balance. You don't get you're not bringing the big guys. You're bringing guys that get it done. You're manufacturing runs. You're getting things done. You're getting doubles. You're knocking bases in, guys in when they're on base. And that's what the Orioles are doing, especially this past month.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you were to tell me going into June that our rotation would consist of Kramer and Voth, this guy Voth, and, you know, Wells, and Lyles, I'd be saying, oh man, and Watkins, Spencer Watkins, I was saying, oh man, things are not going well, because that was my biggest issue with this team going into it. It's like, do we have enough starting pitching to be competitive? But somehow this month, it feels a little bit like duct tape. I mean, I think what Tyler Wells is doing is legit. I think he's good, and that's not shocking. But Dean Kramer's performance so far this year, I would call shocking. The fact that he's played so well this year after being really abysmal last year, it really turned into a really nice kind of bounce back. for Dean Kramer. And that's kind of what makes you positive and feeling good about this series. You have your two best starters currently going at it in the first two games, Wells and then Kramer. There's a lot to be excited about the way we're playing. That does seem to be a good vibe in the clubhouse, and it's all, and you wonder, you know, I wonder, there's no help coming from the minors with starting pitching. It doesn't seem like, no, DL Hall, you know, has been inconsistent. You know, you can wait on Matt Harvey, maybe making it some time to this rotation, but there's no, like, this is it. Like, this is kind of a rotation. Hopefully Kyle Bradish will be back in a couple weeks, but you wonder if this starting pitching can hold up to kind of keep you competitive in these games like we have been in June. But yeah, it's been fun so far in June.
Yeah, and the Athletic in their power rankings today, they bumped the Orioles up to 21, which is part of what's going on is the people who pay attention, the people who watch baseball, the Orioles are no longer a laughing stock. Like, people are taking notice. It started with local reporters taking notice and fans like us taking notice. And now national media is starting to notice it all. The description for the Orioles say, the Orioles are the 2022 Orioles are legitimately feisty. And I think feisty is a great term for the Orioles because they're annoying. If you're playing them, they're annoying. They don't stop. They're constantly, even on Sunday's loss with the White Sox, we scored two runs in the ninth inning to try to come back.
Yep, and had the Orioles on. Yep,
constantly. Yeah, and had guys on. So, and they go on with, this legitimately looks like the best Orioles season in 5 years, maybe possibly even six, with the winning percentage still starting with a four and floating around 20 games back from first in the AL East by the end of June. That 20 games back is because the AL East is a monster house. We would not be so far back in every other division in baseball. And you see that by even the wild card, we're only seven games back. And that's because all the other four teams in baseball could go to the playoffs, or the other four teams in our division could go to the playoffs this year.
Yeah, I saw some stat that Boston was playing at some like ridiculous over 600% winning for the past, you know, month, and they're still have lost four games on the Yankees or something, because the Yankees have been so ridiculous this year. I mean, on the one hand, you hear that the 21st power ranked team, and you're like, oh, well, we're still, you know, not one of the best teams in baseball.
Bottom third, yeah.
But on the other hand, like, we've been 29 and 30 the past four years.
Yeah.
And so this shows that we're actually moving in the right direction. And that's what it's all about, right? Because this is not the final destination with Orioles. This is not like, you know, okay, this is the team. No. This is the start of what is going to be the team, right? And so that's what's exciting. We're seeing it actually, all the work, because it's so frustrating for years, the past 4 years, we've been putting the work in without seeing any results at the major level. And now this year, we're finally seeing some results at the major level, and this is just the beginning. Yeah.
And that's the thing. It's the beginning. It's very small moves, because you're still seeing all of the future at Norfolk.
Yeah. Well, I got really excited today because, you know, just go real quick, that down on the farm, Connor Norby and Colton Cowser and Kobe Mayo were all caught up. The three best players in Aberdeen, the three kind of highest rated prospects in Aberdeen, were all caught up to Bowie. So now the Orioles' top nine prospects are all at Bowie or Norfolk.
So let's go to Bowie. Let's go Friday night.
All right, let's do it.
We saw, we'll get to it, but we saw Aberdeen last Friday.
Yeah.
So let's go see all those guys play in Bowie, play some tougher competition on Friday.
I was, and honestly, like, Bowie was kind of lame before the promotion of these three guys, because the guys you want to see, Westberg and Henderson.
Is Kerstedt coming up to Aberdeen?
No, he hasn't been caught up yet. He's the one guy that's that top prospect that's
still
not
still in Darmara.
Yes, still in Darmara. But he's been, I mean, I think they just want to see him, the health factor still with him. He's been just dominating at that level at Darmara, and hopefully he continues to dominate. He should be dominating, right? He's playing a bunch of, you know, 12-year-olds down there.
It's like Matt Harvey right now.
Yeah.
It's like the news that Matt Harvey is pitching great. He better be. He's a professional pitcher.
Yeah, but I mean, look at Kershaw; he's batting 422, over 400, an OPS of over 1,000. So yeah, he's just got his first home run this past week, and so he's doing fine. I think it's just kind of getting him healthy. I would imagine he's at Aberdeen, by next month. I would imagine he's at Aberdeen if he continues to play like this. But yeah, it's exciting that so many of our key pieces now are at Norfolk and Bowie, so they feel kind of really close. I mean, once you get to the Tides, you know, you're just a phone call away. And so, and then while we're talking about it, I mean, since it's been a couple weeks now, and Gunnar Anderson and Jordan Westberg have been just tearing up. Now, Norfolk unfortunately has no pitching, so they give up a lot of runs.
But does that mean we can see those guys end of July?
Well, the other interesting thing, Josh, is it's kind of like Adley Rutschman at catcher, in that your weakest position was catcher. Your best prospect is sitting there. Okay, so now your weakest position is what? It's the second infield. Base, it's shortstop, second base, third base, all of them, right? Yep. And all of a sudden you have, you know, two studs at Norfolk who are tearing it up at Norfolk. And so you wonder, at what point can you call these guys up? And I don't know what the answer is, but you look at Westberg batting 366, OPS over 1,000. You look at Henderson getting on base, walking more than he's striking out still. You look at even Vavra. I mean, just the top of that, Vavra and Stowers round up that top four. I mean, all of them could be up by the end of the year. So that's pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah. And that's – all right, so – I know we're all over the place tonight because we didn't build up any show notes. Kind of last minute decided to do this.
Okay, we do have show notes if you check.
I haven't looked at the show notes. So okay. I've been crazy today. So I wanted to ask.
You put an article on there by Kevin Gausman I want to get to, too. That was interesting.
Oh, it wasn't by Kevin Gausman. It's about Kevin Gausman.
About Kevin Gausman, yes.
Based on an interview with the catcher.
Yeah.
Caleb Joseph.
We were all over the place. I just took all over the place in the next level.
Well, I want to talk about that. But back to the Orioles playing really well right now. Back to the bullpen being ridiculous.
Yes.
Is this the future, this bullpen? Or do we dump all these guys at the trade deadline? Like, I want to see Lopez on the 2023 Orioles. But you know it's got to be tempting for Michael Elias to trade him, right?
Yeah.
Do you look at a guy like Lopez and say, no, he's the future? Or do you see, hey, he's having a great year, let's take advantage?
Yeah, I think this is, Josh, I think it's a great question. And to me, it's one of the most, I go back and forth all the time. Because if you're Mike Elias, you look at, okay, what trade pieces do I have?
Right.
And honestly, you don't Not have that many. Many
Santander. Like,
yeah, Mancini. Santander. But again, I mean, he's a good outfielder. He's not a great outfielder.
You're trading about him because he's not the future.
Yeah, like he's not Austin Hayes, he's not Sergio Mullins. So, hey, playoff contender, would you like our third best outfielder? He's not going to be the top guy on the market, right? And so any return you're going to get from him is going to be minimal. And Michael Elias has to decide, do I want to even get that return?
Right. And when you look, there's three guys that you know you're not trading. You're not trading Mullins, Hayes, and Rutschman.
Right, and out there, Mountcastle on that list.
And Mountcastle.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you got four guys that you are not trading no matter what.
Yeah. And so if you look at Santander with a batting average 239, like I don't just know how many people he's going to want him. And so where you have, but you're right, Josh, where you have your best, I think, trade candidates is your bullpen. Because that's been, I just mentioned, we're third in baseball in bullpen numbers. And on the one side, you could argue, hey, listen, this is a bunch of, we went through this a couple weeks ago. These are all waiver guys. These are just random guys we just picked up for nothing. And so all of a sudden you could turn a guy you picked up for nothing into actual value in prospects, which must be incredibly tempting. Because then Michael Elias could argue and say, well, listen, I did this once. I can do this again. I can pick up another waiver guy and turn him into a good bullpen arm.
Right. It turns – and this will be a good transition eventually to us talking about Gausman. Because what it does is it sells at that point you are selling the system, not the player. Right. You're saying that it's not Lopez that's so great. It's what we did with Lopez.
Right.
So we'll trade Lopez, and I'll do the exact same thing next year with another guy.
Right. The other side of that, of course, is Lopez has not just been some guy. Like, Lopez has been great.
Yes.
And so And if you want to make this argument, right, that we're done with kind of the, like, we're at the point where we need to start keeping acquiring players to win. Lopez has been amazing, right? He has a whip of 0.81. He's given up, Josh, 3 earned runs the entire year. In 36 innings, 3 earned runs. I mean, this is Zach Britton type nonsense stuff here, right? And so, right. Which is, on the one hand, you could get a really nice haul. He's your best trade candidate if you want to trade him. People are going to call and people are going to ask. People are going to ask. Like, this is what you do. You go to, everyone needs bullpen help. All the playoff contenders need bullpen help. Here's a team out of the playoffs in the Orioles. People will call for Jorge Lopez. And they'll call with some tempting offers. And I think it's going to be, I don't know. I don't know what Michael Lyons is going to do, because Jorge Lopez is under contract for a few more years. And so he could be part, you know, of this, you know, next year at playoffs and 2 years and 3 years. Like, he could be part of that.
Right.
Though it's going to be tempting. I think it's going to be tempting for Michael Lyons. Though, like, also the other part of it is, though, like, the Orioles, I mean, have been so patient with Jorge Lopez. They've tried him in so many different roles, right? Like, this is
right. But now it clicked.
Yeah, now it clicked. And so someone you invested so much time and energy in, I don't know. There might be some kind of compulsion to want to want to keep that, because you spent so much time making it work. On the other hand, you're like, this would be trading Jorge Lopez at his peak. And that might be tempting to do if you're Michael Elias, to get back some real tangible prospects right. with upsides. And you could easily, like, slide Felix Bautista into that closer spot, and it wouldn't be that much of a downgrade. So I don't know. I think that's a really tough
right. but that's where
and interesting decision.
It is. And it's a question of those draft picks in the future and what that really means for you versus what you have now. As the fan, I want Bautista on this team and I want Lopez on this team.
Yeah,
I want them to be back-to-back guys. I want,
yep.
because I love what we're watching now. Lopez is, you mentioned his 36 innings. He also has 36 strikeouts. He gets a strikeout an inning.
Yeah.
That's great. It's great yep. that you can rely on a guy with that. He's got the right pitch selection, which is what we got to get to with Gausman. That's was part of how we mishandled Gausman, apparently. So, like, I don't want to, I finally see, like, an Oriole pitcher that we helped figure out what was going on, and I really would hate to lose him because we just want to acquire people.
Right, because we're at the point in the rebuild, the tanking, as Buster Olney refers to it. And by the way, I listened to the Buster Olney podcast just to see if Buster mentioned anything about, you know, taking 3 out of 4 from the White Sox and the great month Orioles are having. Shockingly, Buster never mentioned the Orioles in this podcast.
you knew that.
but no,
just want to punish yourself.
I kind of went through, Josh, thinking about these questions, thinking about the Orioles playing so well, and that means individual players are playing well. And I was kind of thinking about trade candidates, and I wrote down who I think is kind of most likely to be traded and the least likely to be traded.
Okay.
And I ranked them from kind of 1 to 10. 1 being no way they're traded. 10 being right. they're as good as gone.
Yeah, you know my good is gone guy. I've been saying it since before the season started.
Well, I'll give you a name. You tell me, and we'll see how much we're aligned. 1 to 10. 1 being definitely going to stay here, not being traded. 10 being he gone. Where would you rate this player? All right. Odor. 1 through 10. 1 saying 10 he gone.
Odor is gone as long as we can find a trade candidate, because he is not part of the future.
Okay. So you're saying 10? What number you give me?
6. He's okay. Batting 197. He's been good recently, but he's still batting 197. So I don't know what you really get for him, but there was no plans for him in the future. If you are bringing up any of those guys from Norfolk, Odor's gone.
Yeah, I have a feeling our infield will look completely different next year. And you're right.
Outside of first base.
And to me, if Odor was having a good year, I'm with you. It'd be a 10. I don't know who's going to win Odor. I put it as a 4, just because I don't know if we'll be able to trade him anybody.
Right. Well, he might just be a cut. If we're ready to bring guys up, he might be a DFA.
Well, I think he's a great roster guy. Yeah, it depends. Yeah, who they want, but I think he's a great roster guy to be having your bench. Ramon Urias. injured now, but had a really good year last year. Okay year this year, but injury concerns recently.
Five. Yeah. I'm not sure who. Again, not part of the future. Not sure who would want him and who would trade him.
Yeah.
Who would give anything for him. But like, what are we talking about? Ball of bags?
Yeah.
Bag of balls.
Ball of bags, bag of balls, whatever. Yeah, yeah. I put him as a five. Again, I think a little more likely just because I think he has more upside than Odor. That's what I said. But yeah, but I, again, I don't know who's going to actually want to trade for your eyes. And this, yeah. What about Mateo?
Oh,
been really good defensively.
But Mateo's, really but fast. Down at the plate, really poor at the plate. He, again, he's batting under 200. He's got a 199 batting average. He's right there with Odor. A guy I really want to leave to see. Yeah. He's got no history of proving this.
He's got 19 steals, though.
He's a three. Nobody's going to give anything for him. No bag of balls for him.
Yeah. Yeah. I have him as a, what do I have him as? A four. So I'm kind of right there with you. I mean, it's incredible. It'd be incredible. He has 45 hits. 12 of them, I guess now 17 are extra base hits. So 45 minus 17 was like 28 or something. And yet he still has 17 stolen bases, which is kind of incredible. I'm sorry, 19 stolen bases. So literally every time he gets on the field or gets on base, he's stealing. Josh Mancini?
A 10.
A 10. He's 10, he's gone.
He's gone. He's the best trade candidate on this team. He's batting 285. The Orioles are showing off that he can play first base. He can play outfield. There's a reason they're putting him on the outfield and putting the guy like Hayes or McKenna at DH because they want to show that Trey can play the outfield. They're quickly marketing Trey. There's nothing that they can get back. The problem is there's nothing that they can get back for Trey Mancini that Oriole fans do not complain about. No matter what you get, Oriole fans will complain because they have decided that he is the face of the franchise. They have decided that he is this great guy that needs to lead the future because he not because he's this amazing player, but because he beat cancer.
Because he's an amazing human.
And he's a good human. But
and he's been with the team longer than anyone, pretty much, on this roster,
right? Yeah. But Trey's gone. The future of this team is Mountcastle, Rutschman, Mullins, and Hayes.
All right. I mean, the only knock against him, I think, at this point, is he only has seven home runs. Though in his defense, it should be like 11 without that wall there.
Right,
which back.
And that's the other thing. I don't know how much he wants to stay in Baltimore now with the wall moved.
Yeah, I have him as a five. I don't know. Part of me thinks he's really going to stay and be that veteran leader.
Ten, he's gone.
Chemistry.
All right, he's gone.
We mentioned it before. What number we put on Santander?
A seven. Okay. Again. It's there's always teams that need outfield help, and he's batting the 200, 238. He's good defensively. Someone, if they want to trade him, they can find someone for him.
Yeah, I think Elias will be actively trying to trade him. I just don't think. I mean, maybe it's not a big deal to teams, but I think the whole vaccine thing is a big deal that you can't play in Toronto. So I think maybe this offseason, we'll
trade him to the National League.
Yeah, but then you got to talk about, you know, potentially World Series. I don't know. If he was a great player, you kind of look the other way. But he's not even a great player; he's just a good player. And so I don't know. I think obviously he'll try to trade him. I also don't know. I don't buy the argument that there's no room for Santander. I don't buy the argument that that he's blocking people. And I know Kyle Stowers is the guy that people want to see. But I just want to point out real quick here. Austin Hayes has gotten hurt almost every year of his career. Thankfully, he's been healthy and has been fantastic this year. We've also seen Santander get hurt. We've seen Trey Mancini obviously be out for a while for other reasons. But like players get hurt all the time, and I don't know why having four good outfielders is all of a sudden you have to trade somebody. Like good teams have four great outfielders. Good teams have six great starting pitchers. This idea that if you have someone in the minors being blocked by a major leaguer, you have to trade the major leaguer. No, like you need depth. And that's something this team lacks currently. And so I think that this idea that you must trade Santander to make room for Stowers is kind of silly, because I'm telling you, at some point, someone's going to get hurt. Someone's going to miss some time.
Sure.
Someone's going to get hit in the thumb with a baseball. Like, it's going to happen. And so it's okay to have four good outfielders.
No, I agree. But part of this discussion is, you know, Mike Elias wants to trade someone. So you're trying to see who can he trade. And the fourth outfielder would be the guy to trade.
Yeah.
He's also.
I think he will try to trade him, but I don't think he like needs to trade him.
No, and I know the batting average is a little lower. The home runs haven't been there, but you do have
the home runs. He leads the team in home runs.
All right. Well, you also got to look at the fact that walks. He's got 30 walks this year.
Yeah,
which is a career high for him.
Yeah. No, he's been more patient at the plate. It's true. Yeah. So. Jordan Lyles getting to some pitchers here. Is Jordan Lyles gone?
Yeah. I would say I don't even know if Lyles even pitched enough to. What, be a fifth pitcher on someone's team? Is anyone even going to take a phone call for an Orioles pitcher that's not in the bullpen?
Yeah, I mean, Lyles is the classic, and this is what everyone said when we signed him, and this has turned out to be true. Like, he is your innings eater. Like, he's going to go, you know, six innings, give up four or five runs, just like he did the other day, and that's kind of who he is. I mean, he leads the team. This should come as a surprise to nobody. But this is why we signed him, right? He leads the team in innings pitched. You know, he's right up there with games started. He also leads the team in losses. I think that's indicative of him just always staying in the game longer. Yeah,
until,
I mean, he leads the team in innings pitched by like 20 innings. The next guy is Tyler Wells, who at the beginning of the season wasn't even going back past the fifth inning, and so he has an ERA of 4.94, which is high. But if you need someone as a fifth starter to eat innings, and we've seen them do this before, right? With like a Tommy Malone type guy, where you trade him for some 17-year-old guy to throw in your Florida Coast League or whatever. So I think they'll try to move him. But will a team kind of bite on him is the question.
Right.
So I put Lyles as a 5. Okay. I put him as a 9.
Okay.
I think some team's going to want him just to eat innings.
That would be great. I'd love to see us get something for him.
Hey, a couple of bullpen guys real quick. We talked about Lopez, so we don't need to talk about him again. Seeing Perez, for me, I mean, we've seen what happened. He's a lefty specialist. Not really specialist. He's an eighth inning guy for us. But Seeing Perez, to me, is a guy that I feel like is a little bit expendable, especially with the emergence of Nick Vespy as a really good lefty reliever, too.
Yeah.
He's to me the guy most likely to go in the bullpen. Also, his ERA is 1.17, just having a great year. And so I think, to me, likely bullpen guy, it's him.
If you want to keep Lopez, you want to keep Batista, this is the guy that you're out there marketing. And you're pointing out that he's only 26 years old. You're pointing out his strikeouts. He's got almost a strikeout in and 21 strikeouts for 23 innings.
Yep. He's only given up 3 runs all year.
Right, exactly. That's the stuff you're promoting. So yeah, I'm gonna put Perez at a 8.
Yeah, similar to me, I put him as a 7. I think he's likely gone. Is there anyone? I mean, there's other guys like Dylan Tate is another guy that they could trade.
I feel like we've had a Dylan Tate discussion for years.
Yeah, I put him as a 3 just because he seems to finally figured out this year. And so I don't know if the Orioles want to trade him when you finally have figured out Dylan Tate. He's finally pitching well. I think he's a back-end bullpen guy. And so I would be a little surprised if they traded him. I put him as a 3. But
nope, I agree with all that.
Yeah, the other couple guys in the bullpen, Baker, again, I think his ERA is worse than kind of – is not indicative of how well he's pitched. And then Joey Crable is another guy who they picked up of waivers, I believe from Tampa, who is having a good year in the bullpen. I think it's likely if, you know, Elias doesn't want to trade Lopez, which I kind of hope he doesn't. I think trading a Perez and a Crable, you get a couple of prospects back that way, and you can kind of keep your main back end in the bullpen with Bautista and Tate and Lopez intact. And I feel like you can replace some of those other guys. But anyway, yeah, I was just mulling it over today.
Yeah, I think the other guy in your bullpen would be that Diplon guy.
Yeah.
So they, I know they just optioned him to Norfolk, but that was more of the Norfolk shuttle making room, bringing him. They keep bringing him up and down, kind of making room for him. But when they bring Putnam in games, he's been doing fine.
Yeah, yeah. And so maybe you can make the argument too, like there's a larger sample here with Joey Kreibel. So maybe you could say, listen, we can feel like we can replace Kreibel with the plan and not falter that much as our right. sixth inning guy or the whatever.
The plan has pitched 5.2 innings. You know how many strikeouts he has?
How many?
Eight.
Okay.
Eight strikeouts in five innings. That's what you're marketing. You're marketing. You're saying, yeah, he's got a one, and he's got a 159 ERA. And I know it's only been five innings in five games, but it's something to look at, something to show off. Again, deciding whether you can trade him, or you say I can trade these other guys because look, what I did with Lopez, I can do with Diplin.
Yeah, yeah, and I want to put those in the same sentence, but the point is, like Doros has shown,
it's a system
that's shown that we can find guys. To pitch in our bullpen, and so we're okay with trading, you know, a Lopez or a Kreibel or even a Tate because we've shown we can replace it with other guys.
Yep. Yeah, Crable's right there in the middle as well.
Yeah. All right. I wanted to mention we can talk about the Kevin Gausman article in a minute. I just want to mention this real quick because you keep on bringing up strikeout per nine innings.
Yeah.
The guy in the organization. Who's better than anyone in the organization as far as strikeout per innings. There's a guy at Norfolk
Brian right Mattis, now. He's not around anymore.
No, there's a guy at Norfolk right now who averages, a starting pitcher averages 14 strikeouts per nine innings, which is an insane number. Unfortunately, this year at Norfolk, while averaging 14 strikeouts per innings, he also averages almost seven walks per nine innings. And I'm talking about DL Hall, who has dominant stuff, but continues to walk a ton of guys. Again, strikes out 14 per nine, walks seven per nine. And it's kind of been, he had a bad start his past go around. So it seems like DL Hall to me, Josh, is unfortunately not knocking on the door just because he doesn't seem to be able to locate his pitches.
It's all right. We've got a little bit of time. So,
but. Yeah. But if you're taking just encouraging notes from DL Hall, though, what encourages me is he's been healthy so far this year. They've been babying him some. The past two starts, he's just gotten up to over 80 pitches. They've been babying him. He's thrown in 38 and a third innings this year. Last year, all of last year, I'm sorry, he's thrown in 40. That's just Norfolk. He's thrown 46 innings total this year. Last year, only threw 31 innings. Then, of course, he didn't throw at all in 2020 because, you know, 2020 was 2020. And then the year before that, he only threw 80 innings. And so I think the fact that he stayed healthy and throwing 38 in the third innings, to me, that's just as important as the numbers putting up. I want to see DL Hall get through this entire year healthy. But again, this walk thing is becoming a thing with DL Hall. And unfortunately, yeah. It doesn't matter how hard you throw it or how nasty your slider is. If you can't locate it, it doesn't really matter. So hopefully he can get that figured out.
Yeah, but I like your argument that 2020 was 2020.
Yeah.
So as we were talking about the future of the Orioles and this late night baseball, it's always fun to see the future perform. And we got to see that tonight as Rushman and Mountcastle got back-to-back dongs.
Yeah,
that's fine.
I mean, Rutschman is. We said it when he had the slow start. Like guys,
we said
it doesn't matter.
Month.
Chill. It doesn't matter. Yeah, give him a month, and now he's just a beast out there. He's an absolute beast. So that's Rutschman is going to be so much fun to watch for so many years. It's good stuff. Good stuff.
Right.
You want to get this Kevin Gausman article, Josh?
Yeah. So it's an article about Kevin Gausman, not by Kevin Gausman, as you said earlier. So it's really Caleb Joseph was on Glenn Clark Radio.
And Caleb Joseph, by the way, calls all the Blue Jay games.
Right.
He's an analyst. I guess he does TV. Right.
His color guy, yeah.
Yeah, color guy.
Right. So he was a guest on Glenn Clark this week. Talking about the Blue Jay series last week. And they talked about Kevin Gausman and his outstanding year. I mean, if just look, Kevin Gausman's having a career year. It's clear that things kind of clicked for him this year.
Well, he had a great year with the Giants last year, too.
That's true. Basically, since he left Baltimore, he's gotten better and better. And we've seen this pattern before with Jake Arrieta and guys. So we know that there's been a problem in Baltimore.
Oh, is this article about the cutter again?
Almost. So it talks. So Caleb Joseph shared about how the Orioles were changing the way Kevin Gausman pitched, where they wanted him to throw his fastball low and inside, though the way he throws his fastball, it rises, which meant to get low and inside, he was always missing his spots. So guys were hitting it. He had a nasty splitter. Right, because it was rising
into the middle of the zone where they were
cranking. Exactly. Sure. Because the type of fastball he throws isn't designed that you would throw it down and inside or whatever.
Yeah, you just throw it in the middle and then it rise to the top of the zone. Sure.
Right, you let it rise out of the zone. Exactly. Right. And then you force pop-ups that way. Then they talked about his splitter and how he has a great splitter, but the Orioles wanted him to throw it less and save it for two strike moments and instead throw a slider. Now, if you look at Kevin Gausman's stats today, he's throwing the splitter a ton because it's his best pitch. So he's throwing it all the time.
Right. Not just on two strikes.
And the Orioles wanted him to build to that point with a slider. He never got the slider down well. He could not control the slider and hit his spots with the slider, which again left the slider up and in the middle, just like the fastball. So he was never able to hit his spots because the Orioles were totally misusing him.
And meanwhile, while he was spending all the time working on the slider, he could have been working on perfecting his fastball and splitter, which he throws, right, 80% of the time. Instead, he's spending all his time on this pitch he throws very rarely, the slider. Sure.
Right, because the Orioles know better. Instead of taking what your guy's great at,
right,
they're trying to change him. And that was basically the gist of the article, is the Orioles, we as Oriole fans always thought, well, Kevin Gausman got ruined because of the Norfolk shuttle. The up and down.
And the bullpen starter, yeah.
Right, exactly, that they messed with him that way.
Yeah.
This is the first time I'm hearing anything about messing with the way the guy pitches and his pitch selection. And that's really frustrating because it seems like, it's like, why would you teach someone to do that? Well, you wouldn't bring a batter in and tell him, all right, I know in college you were crushing the ball from the right side of the plate, but now I want you, you're going to be left-handed on our organization.
Yeah.
So it's very frustrating to have pitching coaches that think they know better and won't listen to where the player's at and know the player. So I found it very irritating, but also at least encouraging that we don't have that anymore. It seems like what we're doing is making our guys better, not holding them back.
Oh, that's interesting that you found it frustrating. I found it I didn't really find it frustrating. I found it interesting in that the analytics that we talk a lot about, it's sometimes hard to figure out, like, all right, how the analytics actually make a pitcher better. And that the Kevin Gausman story was a perfect case, right? Because it shows, like, the data shows that his fastball, the spin rate, causes it to raise up higher in the zone. But old school way of coaching is you always want to throw your fastballs low and away to induce ground balls or whatever. But these, you know, the pitch track or whatever shows that fastball was rising. And so the data shows that you want to throw a rising fastball higher in the zone to get better results.
Interesting. All right. So your view is that it showed the Orioles were not relying on analytics back then.
Right.
That
was pre-analytics. And now we're doing that.
Yeah. But then at the same time, the same time this is going on is the same time that we had Mark Trumbo there. And remember, they were trying to get Mark Trumbo to change his swing based on analytics. Right. And he was throwing a fit because it just caused more pop-ups for him.
Right. Yeah. His launch angle.
That was all about launch angle. So that's where you were seeing stats hurt a guy. But this really, I don't know. Did they need analytics to know that this ball rises? I mean, it's, you know it, you pitch it, you throw it all the time. They were trying to change his pitch.
Yeah, no. And I think pitching to your strengths too, I think is a good point. And the other thing is, and we've seen this a lot across the league, where, and this wasn't true, I don't think, 10 years ago. It probably wasn't even true for most pitchers when Kevin Gausman was with the Orioles, in that, like, you pitch your secondary pitches more, right? You look at they always show it in a freaking every telecast, and Silas is always confused because there's like five different baseballs flying at the screen in different colors. And Silas is always like, what is that? What's happening? But they're like showing every pitch the pitcher has,
right,
and the batting average against that pitch. And it used to be like what they would tell Kevin Gausman, you save your best pitch for your out pitch. But now, like, there's no out pitch. Now you'll throw a splitter any count, right? You'll throw your curveball any count. You'll throw your best pitch any count, because if it's your best pitch, if that's the lowest batting average against, you know, you should throw it any count. Now, I would argue maybe that's why the Orioles have pitchers have such trouble in two strikes counts, because we don't have, because we used all our good pitchers, all our good pitches, sure, even before didn't we get to two counts, two strikes. But yeah, that's not just an Orioles thing. I think that's across the league. Pitchers are just throwing their secondary pitches more. But I'm encouraged, Josh, because if Kevin Gausman came to the Orioles now, he would have a different experience.
Yeah. No, and that's what I was saying. That's the encouraging part is Kevin Gausman that we see in Toronto could, if he was on the 2022 Orioles, could be the same Kevin Gausman.
Yeah, and maybe better, because I would argue, based on what I've seen, I mean, we have again, let me remind you who our starting pitchers are.
Right, we're making pitchers Kramer, better.
Spencer Watkins, these random guys. Our bullpen is made up. I mean, we've signed no one significant as far as our pitching staff, and we have no high-ranked prospects in our pitching staff, and somehow they're still able to be somewhat successful. So, yeah, I mean, I think our pitching development is second to none thus far from what I've seen major level.
I agree. But it's just disappointing that it seems what the Giants and Blue Jays have done is just let Kevin be Kevin.
Right. And that's the same thing with Arrieta, right? It's similar story with Arrieta.
Yeah. They let Arrieta be Arrieta. And yeah, every pitcher who's been upset leaving the Orioles, they talked to Arrieta, I think, was very vocal about them trying to change and control what he did, right, and not let him. We always talked about it as the cutter, because that was the Arrieta pitch that they took away.
Yeah.
But they started throwing again. They did the splitter with Gausman. So,
yeah, but Josh, I mean, I don't think Mike Elias and the development team, Matt Blood and everyone, is just letting these pitchers just do whatever they want.
No, they're like improving them.
Right. Like they're using analytics to hopefully, right, accentuate their strengths, right, and but to help them hearing... to show them what they do well. Like, that's part of the point, right, of analytics. Like, here's what you do really well. Do it more. As right, opposed to coming in with the Orioles with Kevin Gausman, here's what you do well, but now we want you to do this. Yeah.
Right. I think we don't hear as much now as we did back then of pitchers working on another pitch. You know, that Kevin Gausman's got these pitches, but they want him to work on the slider.
Yeah.
And he's working on the slider and the stuff. We don't hear that as much. And I think we kind of always use that as a spring training excuse of, oh, he's working on something new. Maybe we don't need to work on new stuff. Maybe we need to perfect what we have.
Yeah. I mean, it depends pitcher to pitcher. I think maybe, yeah. I think it depends pitcher to pitcher.
Right. Some like pitchers
talked about Dean Kramer working on some stuff, and then his curveball has been less effective recently because he's working on other pitches. But yeah, I think, especially some pitchers with Orioles,
learn new stuff easier.
Yeah. And I would assume that those new pitchers are happening at, that's what they're doing with the Shorebirds or Aberdeen. Like, I don't want someone coming to Orioles and trying a new pitch out.
Right. Even by the time they reach Norfolk,
right,
we should have it set.
Yeah, hopefully.
And that's part of the Elias team. That's part of the long-term plan, where you're not just focused on your level, but you're focused on the entire career.
Yeah, absolutely. And that goes back to maybe the discussion we had before about this bullpen and kind of putting a system in place there that can make the best of the talent that you have. Yep. Still seem to be doing a pretty good job of.
Yeah.
All right, so we finish off June. Is this the last series in June? I guess it is with Seattle. And then
it's gotta be today. I mean, it's June 27th, so
yeah.
Let's see. Let me pull up the schedule.
Yeah, it's a 3-game series.
Because June only has 30 days.
30 days, yeah.
And we have Thursday off. So we have 3 games in Seattle. Then we go to Minnesota next weekend to kick off July. So,
yeah, and this is actually, Josh, not looking at it, just looking at the schedule now. Minnesota's good. They're not great, but they're a good team. And then you have Texas and LA Texas, who is not a great team, right?
Yep.
Worse record than us. Oh, no, they have about the same record as us. I think they have 34 wins, too. And then after that, though, you go to LA, who has about the same record as us.
No, those games are in Baltimore.
Okay. But they're all home. You're right. But Texas and LA, like, those are two winnable series.
Yeah.
And then the
two teams playing worse than they should. And then the Cubs.
Yeah. So that's you could be feeling really good come the All-Star break. That's all I'm saying. If you're an Orioles fan, you could be feeling pretty good come the All-Star break. I'm pumped to see what happens.
Yeah. I can't wait. It's exciting. And yeah, it's exciting to see what happens before the All-Star break. It's real exciting to see how this leads into next year.
Yeah. Because we'll talk a lot in the coming weeks about the trade deadline. But I think what we can all agree on, the core of this team isn't going anywhere, right? We're done trading big pieces, right? We're done trading. The core is here and staying. Cedric Mullins, Austin Hayes, you mentioned it, Adley Rutschman, Ryan Mountcastle. This is what we call the core, and they're not going anywhere.
So the core is here. What jersey are you buying?
Well, Rutschman.
Are you buying Rutschman?
Well, no, I mean, I'm not purchasing it. The baseball jerseys are way too expensive. I'm not buying any jersey.
You gotta be like me and go on one of the Chinese sites.
Yeah, I guess.
I think I'm gonna pick up a Hayes.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think Hayes should be our All-Star. He's getting screwed over in the All-Star voting. But
that's
Hayes,
because the All-Star voting's dumb, and we've talked about it 1,000 times.
It's not about who's best. Yeah.
No.
But yeah, I mean, I think currently, and it's funny because we talked about this maybe a month ago, where Salas was like, you know, who's the best player in the Orioles, Dad? And I brought it on here and talked to you about it. Like, who is the best player in the Orioles right now? And you said Austin Hayes. And I was a little bit skeptical, but I mean, he has shown the month of June, like, dude, he is this year, he is the best player on this team, Austin Hayes. So yeah, that's a good pick.
Yeah, he's a legit all-star, not a Ty Wigginton.
No.
Representative.
He's legit. Yeah, he's not. Yeah, he's not the token Oriole. No, he's legit. I mean, you could argue Lopez should be an all-star, or Lopez should be an all-star.
It's just so hard to get bullpen arms in.
Yeah. Hayes should be an all-star. What are we going to get? I'm curious to see how many all-star players we get. Are we just getting one?
Awesome.
We're just getting one? No, I think we'll get at least two.
All right, we'll talk about it in a couple weeks. I think
we could make a run for it. Lopez definitely should be in there, and Hayes.
All right, we'll talk. There's no way we're getting three.
What's the catcher's field like? I don't know. There's usually no good catchers, right?
I don't think Adley's getting in.
Playing for a month is not enough to...
I don't think so, even though everybody outside of Baltimore also admits Adley's good.
Yeah.
But hey, speaking of Voden and Raiden, we've got a new podcast review over on iTunes.
Oh, yes. Nice.
From the Marked Man, said solid Orioles podcast, 5 stars. Really look forward to this podcast every week. Good analysis and good banter from two guys who obviously love the O's.
We do love the Orioles. That's true. I appreciate the solid review.
I also saw a nice comment. There was a nice comment on Twitter. Our last episode, so 2 weeks ago, or maybe it was 3 weeks ago, whenever we did the broke down the Angelos family fighting.
Oh, yeah. I like that episode. Yeah.
I like that episode, too, because we're brothers. And I saw a nice comment online where people said, hey, I didn't know the guys from 336 are brothers.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, what have you been listening to if you have not figured out that we're brothers?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. All right. Well, that's good. Appreciate you listening. I mean, this is the time to get on the Orioles podcast bandwagon. Yeah. I'm sure by next year there'll be 100 more Oriole podcasts. But remember, we were here first.
This is episode 400. This is episode 472.
Yeah.
All those other guys are going to stop around episode 10.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is the original.
And I'm not going to say they jumped on the bandwagon, but we started when the Orioles stunk. So that's the record show.
And
then even they got good right when we started, and then they were bad again, and we still stayed on here. And now they're good again.
Stayed through it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we saw this all. We've seen this happen before. We've seen the podcast blow up because the Orioles are blowing up.
Yeah.
And then we've seen them all disappear as the Orioles disappear.
Yeah.
Section 336 will always be there.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter if I move to Jacksonville. Doesn't matter if you move to Macon. We're still, it's still 336. It's still talking Orioles almost every week. We had a really good Ripken streak going there. But now we do occasionally have to miss a week or so. But we're always there.
Yep, always there. No matter what the Orioles, even if the Orioles, you know, mess up this trade deadline.
Yep.
Our fandom remains pretty even keel.
But we're also trying to we're trying to cram in as much Orioles baseball as we can right now, because since I'm up in the Northeast for the week and you are in getting ready to leave Maryland, we went and saw Aberdeen this past week.
Yeah.
My first time seeing the Ironbirds.
Big old crowd at Aberdeen.
Really big crowd for Friday night.
It was a random Friday night, and everyone showed up to the Aberdeen Ironbirds game. Right. That was wild.
Yeah. So that was fun. This Friday, we seriously are going to go see the Bowie Bay Sox.
Yeah, I'm 80% sure I'm going to be there.
Your wife told me you'll be there.
Oh, did she?
Yeah.
I also just found out it's Educators Week, so teachers get 2 free tickets, which, again, bumps that percentage up to 80.
All right. Well, yeah, your wife told me, so I'm going to say 100% you're there.
Good. If Emily said it, that is true.
Danny Burt Rohde's joining us as well.
All right.
On Friday night.
Is our dad going to be there?
I don't know. I should ask our dad. Our sons will be there. So here's the tip. I've been saying, whether I go to Bowie or the follow-up is that we're going to also be at the Oriole game on July 4th.
Yeah, July 4th.
I need some 336ers to come find me at these games, because it'll impress the new stepson. So I need to look like I'm famous at these games. So come on out and say hi.
All right, fair enough.
So we'll post on Twitter where we're at. So make sure you're following us over there.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, boys and girls, thank you for listening to that episode. You can follow us, rate and review just like that guy did. Call us a solid podcast. We'll take it. You can follow us on Twitter. You can follow me at Section336. You can follow Josh on Twitter.
At Josh Soroka.
Thanks for listening, boys and girls. And as always, go O's.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.